Welcome to The Bard and Bible, a conversational devotional about scripture, life, and ministry from the perspective of a tabletop missionary still trying to figure out what those words actually mean when you string them together. There's a seat by the fire over there, and it looks like things are just about to get started. Tonight's tale, Redemption Stories. Greetings, ladies and gentlemen, Mike Perna, your resident dwarf bard here, and from now on, I shoot without a script. Okay, so that borrowed line doesn't exactly fit because, one, I don't know if this is going to be from now on, and really, I don't do video, so it's more record than it is shoot. But the reason that I'm going to be starting, and the reason this sounds a little different than it normally is because rather than develop a script like I usually do for this to kind of rein myself in a little bit and to really just provide myself a bit of a framework for this because I'm the only voice that's in your ears right now, I decided I was going to do a little bit more free-flowing, just work off an outline and talk to you guys a bit. Partly this is due to the scheduling because when I started Bard and Bible, I didn't realize that one of the episodes would be hitting the day after Easter. Well, it was supposed to hit the day after Easter anyway. And as the fact that I'm now several days late, you can tell that scheduling is definitely a thing. The other part of it has a little bit to do with the fact that this is still a very young podcast, so I'm still kind of finding its voice. So maybe I end up doing this and you guys really like it this way and you want me to be a little bit more raw and just a little bit more, not unedited, because I know myself and I spend a lot of time editing my own ums and ahs and long pauses, let alone my dog barking. But I want to be just a little bit more open with you guys. It's an experiment, and we'll see how it ends up going. This one, because of the fact that even though I am late, it is still very much close to the Easter season, the Easter celebration, I couldn't not talk about redemption stories. Easter does that to us. Easter is the redemption story. It's the greatest story ever told. It's the fact that God himself came here to restore relationship between himself and his people. The relationship that we busted, and he really had no need to fix, but he did. And what's really crazy to me is that he knew he would from the very beginning of time, before it was even necessary. Now, I came to faith in a time period that one would consider to be quote-unquote later in life. Now, it's not late in life. I don't even think I've reached late in life. But I was 17 when I came to faith, even though I had heard about God beforehand. I didn't really buy into it until I was 17. And that might not sound like much to some people, but if you're a church kid who grew up in the church and really like gung-ho about God and the faith since forever, 17 is practically ancient. But even with getting that later start on things, I've heard countless variations on the Easter story. I've heard it in sermons, I've seen it in dramas, television specials. This isn't even talking about like Easter egg stuff. This is literally the biblical Easter narrative, the heart and soul of the gospel, and the truth that pretty much all of our faith sits on. I've heard it again and again, but it still just floors me. Even in the way we tell other stories, even in the way we entertain each other, we cannot get away from the fact that redemption stories are a huge part of the way we relate to each other. Now, as is my wont, I went into the tavern this previous week and I said, "Folks, I'm talking redemption stories. What are your favorite ones?" And I kicked the doors open. I said, "Any medium, anything you want, any kind of story, lay it on me." And there were some really good ones. One that stuck out to me almost immediately, even though it's not one that I would have thought of initially, just it's mostly because it's not my medium, but it is just this really beautiful illustration of this, is Jean Valjean from Les Mis. Now, that entire story can be seen as a redemption narrative, But there's this really cool moment towards the beginning when Valjean, as a criminal, has basically gone into this priest's house, and they have this moment. The priest takes him in and says, you know, you can stay here, you can hang out, you can do whatever you need, and then go. Well, Valjean ends up stealing a bunch of stuff from him, and he's caught. And yet the priest says, when the police officer brings him in, the priest says, no, I gave this to him so he could start a new life and he could sell these things. And he actually ends up giving him more. That scene, I'm not a big one for Les Mis. I know some people live that play. I never have. But that scene, still, like, it just sticks with me. To kind of go back into absolute nerdery, the second this one got brought up, I knew that it was great, because it's the history of the villain becoming the mentor slash ally. And that's Zuko from Avatar: The Last Airbender. This character is so much the villain for so much of this story, but then at some point he makes the turn. Because Aang needs to get himself somebody to teach him how to do firebending. And he's like, how am I going to do this? The firebenders hate us. They want me dead. But Zuko, after seeing where he is and what his life has turned into, realizes that his place is no longer against the Avatar, but with him. And that's just this beautiful moment. And if you haven't watched it, a lot of people don't get into cartoons, and that is to their folly. Avatar is an amazing watch, and you should definitely pick it up. And naturally, one that I can't let go is Darth Vader, because he's Vader. And I think the reason why Vader has stuck into people's psyches as, like, the ultimate villain is not only because of his cool powers. Like, I can't deny that I've used phrases like, I find your lack of faith disturbing, and I have altered the deal, pray that I do not alter it further. Like, we all do that. Even though nobody actually wants to be Vader, but we still kind of want to be Vader. And I think a lot of that is tied into the fact that he has this redemptive moment. Now, I am not even going to begin to even think about talking about that spoiler. Now, I know you can get t-shirts that have this spoiled on it. You know, can't go anywhere without somebody talking about this scene. But I can't control what other people do. I can only control what I do. And I remember what it was like seeing that scene for the first time as a kid. And even in the smallest chance that somebody is in earshot of this right now, I'm not going to put it out there. But it is one of the most interesting, crazy moments in all of nerd movie history. And if you haven't seen it, you need to. And if you're watching this movie with your kids, man, treasure that moment when this gets revealed, because dang, it is so cool. I'm even going to add in a couple of my own when I talk about these redemption narratives, because there are some that I've experienced that they just stick with me, and nobody mentioned them, but I feel compelled to share them now. One of them is, I'll start with John Marston from Red Dead Redemption. It's a video game that has been out for a long time. They just announced a second one coming out, and I'm pretty excited about that. But Red Dead is a Western, and John Marston is a former gang member in this Wild West just terror force that was going through and just robbing and killing and doing whatever. But he left that life and has made a family for himself and a life for himself. And you end up getting kind of corralled by the lawmakers to go through and literally take down all your old gang. And it's the process of that. And this is another one where, much like Vader, it's been around so long that people tend to know what happens at the end, but I'm not going to be the one that talks about it right here. Go and check it out. Experience it for yourself. And my ultimate favorite redemption narrative is that of Hellboy. Hellboy is one of my favorite characters of fiction. Hellboy is a monster that was destined to destroy the world, but was found by a man named Broom, who raised him up to know right from wrong, to basically be the monster that fights monsters, who defends the weak and takes down all those things that go bump in the night. The fact that you're literally dealing with a servant of destruction and pain and something straight out of the pit of hell, who is basically made a hero. It is without doubt one of my favorite redemption narratives, and Red will always be one of my favorite characters. But having talked about all these, having talked about these redemption narratives, I think there's a distinction that has to be made between them and the redemption narrative that God gives us. The redemption story that we enter into and God invites us into at the cross and the resurrection. There's an aspect to this word that sometimes we deal with and sometimes we don't, but I think that it is pivotal to really understand the difference between the redemption story and other redemption stories. It's the idea that this term is very economic in nature. The term used in the biblical narrative is one that has to do with buying something and paying for something and bringing it out. Specifically, it is often used as a term for paying one's debt to bring about his freedom. And I really think that understanding that concept and that linguistic home that this word finds itself is important to make my key distinction from the other stories. See, in those stories, the character is the subject of the redemption. They are doing stuff and making decisions and creating a path of redemption. In God's story, in our redemption narrative, we are the object of the redemption, not its subject. See, it's something that God does for us, something that God even does to us. God stepped in and paid the debt, which we'll often talk about this transactional kind of stuff, but there's a part of redemption that is not only paying the debt, but bringing that person out into a new existence. Bringing that person from where they were to another place. And that is something that only God can do. That only Christ and his resurrection can make happen. God, in all parts of the Trinity, are working about our redemption. God knew us. Even before we needed to be redeemed, he was bringing about our redemption. Christ, on the cross, knew us and paid our wage, paid what we earned. And the Holy Spirit is literally transforming us into being that much closer to who God would have us to be. This is something that we have no ability to do in and of ourselves. We can step into that. We can ride along with that and be that transformed person. We can be that person that is so close to the will of God that we move and work and do everything in his power. But we can't make that transformation happen. A lot of us have tried, and I will add myself to that, but we are a pale comparison of the work that God's doing. And that's why his redemption story is the redemption story. And while all the other ones we tell each other can be awesome, but they are just a redemption story. I figured I wanted to wrap this one up with a little bit of story time about myself, because yes, I can go all theological and crazy with the concept of my own redemption. I could tell the story about how I came to faith. Those are stories that if you listen to our other podcast, Game Store Prophets, you'll have heard me talk about before. You'll have heard me tell the story of my life and how God stepped into it. But because I don't want to just rehash that, I want to tell a story of my depression. I want to tell the real weight of that in a specifically recent context, because I wasn't 100% truthful about why this is late when I started this episode. Yes, it was scheduling because I had all intentions of getting home on Easter Sunday and banging this out, because I'd already planned it. I already knew what I wanted to say. And we ended up going to have dessert with some friends instead, which was a great time, and I wouldn't have changed it for anything. And yes, it is part because I want to experiment with this, because it took us probably a year and a half to figure out where GSP was and what that was going to look like. So I do want to experiment from time to time. But part of it is because over the past handful of days, I have been struggling with my depression lately. And to clarify, I'm not clinical. It's not because I have a chemical imbalance. I don't take meds. And it's not because I don't want to. It's because I don't need to. That's not where this comes from. My depression is entirely circumstantial, but it comes from the fact that I don't bounce back from things. Your average person will hit a bad thing, or they'll hit a bad segment of their existence, and they'll go out and they'll have fun and whatever. They'll distract themselves, and then they'll get themselves back up. I don't get back up. I crawl back up. And so that leads to hard times when a lot of things hit in fast succession. And while I'm climbing up from one thing, another thing hits and knocks me down even farther. And then while I'm climbing up from that, another thing hits. Things compound with me. And I've acknowledged this about myself. And there are times when I can't do anything about it, and it just hits, and I rely entirely on God and the faithfulness of my friends and family to endure me while I begin the process of climbing back out of that hole. I found myself there, and depression is not just about feeling better and being okay, because there is a distinctly physical impact that depression has on you. Life became challenging. Getting up became a struggle. Going to work was a nightmare. And even when I came home, I found myself not wanting to participate in anything. And that includes stuff I do for this ministry, which is normally my lifeblood. I didn't want to do anything. I checked out of existence. And you might be wondering, Mike, you're talking about these redemption stories. How is that redemptive? And I wanted to share this with you guys because I wanted to reiterate, God can do anything, because this isn't about my story. I mean, it is my story, but it's my portion of God's story. And so what happens is that I understand that while I'm not one that says God intends me to be depressed, I don't believe that in my theology at all. I think we do a disservice to people when we say that God has a plan for you to be in the midst of this awful. It's a misstep and a misquote from an understanding that God does know that it'll happen. And God, knowing that this stuff happens, redeems it. God can use it. And he continues to use my depression. My depression is partly why inroads happen, because my depression is why I've always been drawn to people who don't fit. Because I never did. And there are times when I think I still don't. And so I have always had this heart for people who, you know, want to be a part of something but don't feel like they can be because they don't fit anywhere. I was reading this week through some Spurgeon, and Spurgeon is a great theologian and well worth a read. And one quote just continues to stick with me. It's something that I've always known about Spurgeon, but this quote kind of solidified this overarching knowledge of the man, because he too struggled with depression. The way he said it is, "I would go to the deeps 100 times to cheer a downcast spirit. It is good for me to have been afflicted, that I might know how to speak a word in a season to one that is weary." Guys, I want you to know, more than anything, I want you to know that God knows that it's there. And God, I won't say that he has a plan for you to be depressed, but what I do know is that he will not leave you in that place for no good reason. We serve a God who makes beauty for ashes. We serve a God who will take that garbage and do something awe-inspiring with it. And if you find yourself in that place, you might not believe that, but I want to be that voice that puts that in your ear. Because it is something that carries me through every wave of depression I've had since coming to faith. Because I've had many, but something has changed in them. I have hope in them. It doesn't take the pain away, it doesn't make the struggle easier. They still hurt like a sledgehammer to the chest. But I have seen and have heard so many stories of how God has used my experiences and used my depression stories to do powerful things in the lives of others. So yeah, I would go to the deeps 100 times to cheer a downcast spirit. And I will go 100 times more if I need to. Because I want to be a part of the redemption story that God is telling. Because I am a dwarf bard, and I refuse to let anyone call me suboptimal. You have a story too, and I hope that this week you will go out and share it with somebody. Even if it's hurt, and even if it's dark. Because you have no idea what that darkness might do to bring light to somebody else. It might be a few days late, but happy Easter, everybody. And I will catch you next time, here at the Bard and Bible. Like I said, the format of this one is a bit of an experiment, so if you like it, please let me know. I hate scripting. It's something that I endure because I want to make sure that I give you guys the best experience I can here. So if you guys like this more loose, you know, outlined version rather than the script, please do me a favor and let me know. And if you find yourself in that place that you need an ear to listen, and you need a reminder that God isn't done with you, my ear is always open, and I am more than happy to remind you that this world is infinitely better with you in it than without.